31st, 1974. My name is Pat Davis. I'm taking a course at Bakersfield College called Kern County History, given by Mr. Richard Bailey. As an assignment, I'm going to interview a Kern County native today, Mr. Frank Claudino. We are now at his home. How are you today, Mr. Claudino?
Fine.
Good. Now, I wonder, sir, if you'd like to start with giving us a few of your memories of your father and how you arrived here in Kern County.
Well, I would have to read down that to be able to get that.
All right.
I'm Frank F. Claudino, and was born in Rosedale, California in 1897, and went to school there. My father, Manuel Claudino, was born in the Azores, Portugal in 1865. He came out to California in 1889 and settled in Delano. He went to work on a ranch for 2 or 3 years. He wrote to his other brother to come out, and he did. So Joe Claudino was still another brother, which there was. He come out here later. I don't know the date. His name was John Claudino, and in 1894, my father, Manuel Claudino, and Joe Claudino went into the sheep business in the Greenhorn Mountain area. They were in a sheep business for 4 years, and they had no rain, and it was very dry 4 years. They went broke and sold their 3,000 head of sheep to Mr. John Enos, sheep business for 4 years. They had no rain. It was dry 4 years. They went broke and sold their 3,000 head of sheep to John Enos on Enos Lane for $1 a head. A year and a half later, Mr. Enos sold the sheep for $4.50 a head. My father was afraid to hold them any longer. My father and his brother and Joe Claudino quit the sheep business. The grizzly bears were bad at night. And one night they killed 11 sheep. And another night they killed 7 sheep. For fox, lions, and coyotes, they would kill the lambs and drag them away. After my father and his brother left the part of the mountains, it was called Portuguese Meadows, and from there on it was always been called that. My father and his brother said they would never forget that for years of hard work for nothing, they went back to Delano and went to work on a ranch for 2 or 3 years. My father decided that he would like to get married. My mother and my father's folks were friends for many years back. My father wrote to my mother's folks and asked them for my mother's hand. They told them that he would make a good home for her. He was going in the dairy business and was going to buy a ranch. They talked it over for weeks, and then my father got a letter from her folks saying, "I think this would be fine. You come from a good family." My mother was 4 years old when she last saw my father. My father was then 20 years old, and my mother was 20 years old, and my father was 30 years old. My father sent for her to come out to Delano, California. 7 months later, she was in Delano, California. She lived with my father and oldest brother, Frank Claudino, and his wife was seven months before they got married. He was in the grocery store business, and one of 2 years before they were married, they had to prepare with the priest and make arrangements with the church that their family's background and the history of their religion. It was which it was 7 months before they could be married. This is a Catholic's belief. My mother would not go anywhere without a chaperone. They could not even take a buggy ride. They moved to Rosedale, California, and bought a 20-acre ranch and built a house and a barn. They then went back into the dairy business. They fixed the ranch up, and then they bought 10 cows, and in 4 or 5 years, they had about 35 cows. He raised pigs and lambs and chickens. Then we rented 40 acres more for pasture. We were doing good for and making a good living. We were just beginning to get out of debt. In 1916, my father passed away. He sold the cows and the pigs and everything to pay for the doctor bills and funeral bills that put us in the hole. I quit school when I was 16 years old, also my brother. I bought, and I went to work for Milling Lux for 90 cents a day, 9 hours. I worked there for 7 months, and then I quit and went to work for Kern County Land Company, which was a Callaway ranch. I was a St. Carol, a water tender, for 3 months. Then they put me in the blacksmith shop. I shod horses and repaired equipment, implements. They made me a blacksmith of the ranch. Another brother and a sister went to work there too, and we all paid the ranch off for mother. And then I was 19. I quit and went to war. I joined the Merchant Marine. They sent me to school in San Francisco on a training ship, Iris. I was on that boat for 6 months to take I took the examination and passed as a chief petty officer. My ship was steamship Iris. I was then assigned to another boat. We signed to go to Iquique, Chile, South America, and then to Argentina, and in the Pacific. We were chased by a German submarine 4 hours until dark took over. We lost it by zigzagging, and we came back through the canal. We went to the New York Harbor, and there were a German sub that was staked out with big piers. This sub sank 5 American vessels in 2 days. We took snapshots of it. The sub was sank right in the harbor. It was something to see. I went to New York Harbor base. They sent me back to San Francisco and discharged us there. I was in the service for 2.5 years. I came back and went to work for the Kern County Land Company. The Kern County Land Company was located where the Fox Theater is now. I worked there as a blacksmith on 20th and 8th Street. Mr. Herman Dumble was superintendent there at the time in 1926. I quit there and went to work for Dave Owens and Mr. Batts. That was located on 24th Street and Chester Avenue. I went to work there to learn to be a spring maker. Robert Sheldon bought out Batts and Dave Owens at the time. 3 months later, they moved to 300 19th Street, where the Salvation Army is now. I worked there for 5.5 years. And in 1929, Mr. Robert Sheldon passed away, and Mrs. Minnie Sheldon made me manager to run the business for her. I worked for her for 4.5 years. She decided to sell out to Branham of Taft. I ran the business for him for 3 years. He did not know anything about the business. I quit and went in with Mr. C.L. Stancliffe as manager of the swing shop, and we were school friends. I got all the work. I and Stancliffe went down and bought all the tools, moved them to Stancliffe's shop. We repaired them and resold them again. I was in charge of the swing shop there for 17 years. Then I decided to go and business for myself. So I did. I did as today. I have been here 27 years as Frank Spring Works, Bakersfield. And 1.5 years later, I bought out Mr. Stancliffe's spring shop. He wanted to quit as a spring maker, right to be found. And there I am still 48 years now in the spring business. God bless me and all my wonderful customers that I have made all these years. This was what I saw when I was 7 or 8 years old. There were cowboys all over town, horses and buggies tied to hitching posts everywhere. I would love to see it now. My father would come to town about 1 week or to get a gallon of sour claret wine. I remember these old days. Board sidewalks, brick sidewalks, and some places dirt sidewalks. Then I was 7 years old. I wore knee breeches. These days a boy would wear this type of breeches till he was about 14 years old. I remember looking up at the hotel windows and seeing women with their legs hanging out of a window. Pretty soon I saw another leg hanging out of the window. I said, Dad, what are these women hanging their legs out of the window for? Dad said, well, son, it's hot up there. It's in the summertime. I guess. I said, but they are waving at us to come up. What for, Dad? We don't know them, he said. You talk too much. Be quiet.
Excuse me, Mr. Claudino. Now, these were called boarding houses, I think, these houses of ill repute at that time, weren't they?
Yeah,
is that what they called them?
House of Institute.
Oh, House of Institute, they called them.
Well, hotels, House of Institute.
I see. Okay.
And they were allowed in the houses, but not allowed in the street. And one place in town, they were allowed on the street. Called L Street.
Were there many?
L Street. And they were sitting there loud on L Street, and they built a place around this building. And they set up about a six-foot fence at that time. And I'd say at one time when we peeked over the fence, and I was little, about 4 or 5 years older than that. I was about 12. And there were 10 or 12 women inside of this called bullpen. They put the girls in this fence, it was 6 foot high, and clear around into and run into the house each way. And these girls were not allowed to come out of this bullpen. At that time, that's what it was called. And if you wanted to go and get a girl and go into the bullpen, why, there was a girl stood at the head of the gate, not through the house. You would come in the side of the gate, and there'd be a lady standing there, as you would say, and she would open the door and let you in the bullpen. And there you had the choice of 10 or 12 girls. Then you would take them into the room, and you pay them at that time. Because I used to come in with the cowboys, and the cowboys would leave us at the church, and I'd leave us the town to go to the theater, which they called a 5- and 10-cent theater. It was called the Virginia. And there was another one there was charged a nickel. So we'd go into this show, and even we'd let the cowboys later would pick us up. And that's where they would go, at this bullpen.
Oh, I see.
That gets me. see well at all. Yeah, but, well, I don't forget. I was there for years too. That way, the women weren't allowed in the street. If they come out in the street and caused trouble with the men, they would be arrested. Or sometimes they would push them back into this bullpen, and that's what they called it in them days. And they would have to stay in there. If they was caught out of there, they would have to take them and put them in jail.
Oh, I see.
Or a floater out of town, they called it. Mid County Line, come on, let's see. Let's hold that a minute. I get straightened out here. This one's right. One day our father brought us into the show, and he went down to see a Portuguese friend of his. Mr. Ambrose lived five blocks out of Bakersfield. He put us in a Virginia theater.
This theater, when we were kids at that time, was not a talkie, and you grew in and the picture was on like Charlie Chaplin in them days. And you see this picture, and you'd act, and you couldn't read, and you'd laugh because it was funny. Really, it's another picture that goes on why you'd see the act, and then there'd be a line that you could read. Then there'd be another act, another line you could read. And you enjoyed the picture in them days because most of them were just all funny. But we couldn't read them. And we just went there to see the comedians and things like that.
How much did it cost to get in the theater at that time?
5 cents.
That was a real bargain.
Yeah, it was. It was a real bargain. It was there for, I think it took us 2 hours at the time. And I remember years later, about 2-3 years later, why they charged a dime, 10 cents. But at that time, why, it was 5 cents. And we'd go mostly just to see the comedian pictures like Charlie Chaplin or others. And we wouldn't bother about reading. We'd just laugh at their actions.
To see, those who wish to see may call Frank Tardino, 523-4765. My father got a job on the boat, on a big sailing boat, when he was 14 years old. He was a sailor on this boat for 14 years at 75 cents a day. He said he went around the world 3 or 4 times by water.
And the ship took off from Portugal, and he would tell about different places. He went to China and different India and all over the country. It was a supply ship, and I think he told us it was 300 feet long, and they had 22 men on this boat, and most of them were Portuguese and had a Chinese cook, and a lot of times in a storm, he told us about it, he'd have to get up and change the sail, would start to tear, and he'd have to climb up on a rope. Climb up there, and he'd have to use both hands to fix the sail, so he hung on with his mouth. And he said at times that he's hung on his mouth for 3/4 of an hour without turning loose in order to use his hand in order to save his sail and save his ship.
Well, that's a wonderful story, Mr. Claudino.
Did you know what it is? Now, what do you want me to talk about now?
Well, you can amplify that a little bit about your father, about the
fact
that he never saw.
Let me think a little bit now. I was, when we had these Chinese, my father was about 6 years old. But it would set me back, I'm 77 now, and I was 6 years old. That would set me clear back to what year?
Let's see.
In 1897, my father was a contractor. It was contracting grape vineyard work for the Kern County Land Company. He had about 400 acres to take care of, and he was foreman of all their vineyards and orchards. He hired Chinese to do the irrigating and turning trays and for labor, all labor on the garden. And they used to just camp out in back of our barn. And while irrigating, I can remember they would kill squirrels, and they would bring the squirrels in and take the fat off the squirrels and hang it on a clothesline and let the fat drain out. Then they would take that and rub it on their arms and shoulders and legs, providing they had rheumatism. They would take the squirrel meat and they would hang it on a line also and eat the squirrel meat as jerky was made out of all the squirrel meat. This was seen quite often, day after day, them hanging meat on the clotheslines. So.
You haven't mentioned your mother. Have you some memories of her?
Yeah, my mother and dad had sheep up in Greenhorn Mountains in the Portuguese Meadows. My father didn't want my mother to go up there and cook for him on account of the bears. We had a spring wagon, and it has covered all around with canvas, which it kept our food and water and everything in the spring wagon and supplies. So one night, mother was up there she lived up there about 6 months with dad, and then about one night, about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, a grizzly bear tried to get in the wagon, and she screamed and hollered and jumped out the back end of the wagon and run out to the sheep pen, which dad was asleep in the sheep pen. Somebody had to stay asleep each night. Each one of the brothers would sleep in the sheep pen, take turns about. Mother run out there crying and screaming. There was something that was trying to get her in the wagon. So dad come back with his gun, and then they noticed it was a grizzly bear trying to get in the wagon. They did not shoot the bear. They just hollered at the bear and one thing and another, and he walked off. So mother went back to the sheep pen and slept with dad that night. And 2-3 nights later, dad decided to bring her back to Bakersfield because she was so scared this bear that night that she decided she would come back and live with her brother, Frank Claudino and Delano.
How many children were there in your family, Mr. Claudino?
There were 9 children. The first 3 children died of cow's milk. And then I was the 4th, and I come pretty near dying with cow's milk, and doctors expected I wouldn't live probably 2 or 3 weeks if they didn't take me off of cow's milk and get a goat and give me goat's milk. Mother started feeding me goat's milk, and about 3 weeks I began to improve. And about 4 or 5 weeks I was getting along fine. I was okay. And the rest of the children, then dad bought another goat or two, and the rest of the children then was all raised in cows and goats, pardon me, in goat's milk, till later the doctors were examining the cows and found out some of the cows had TB and some had other diseases. And at one time, I remember, we had ordered to kill 11 cows, sell 11 cows to the butcher for dog meat.
How long did your mother live, Mr. Claudino?
My mother lived, of all of us kids and families she's raised, she lived to be 87 years old.
That's wonderful.
And she lived till she was just tired of living when she was 87 years old. She told me one morning, she said, "Frank," she says, "I'm just tired of living. I'm sitting this chair now for 3 years. She said, "I can't go out." We used to take her out quite often, but still she said she was tired of living, and she would not take any more medicine and just give up, wouldn't eat or anything, and just give up and said, "I want to die. I don't want to live any longer. I've seen 6 of my kids die, and I'm not going to see any more. I lived long enough, son. I'm going to die, and I want to, and everything will be all. I got everything straightened out." She bought her own coffin and and fixed up all of her deals and paid cash for it and everything for the funeral arrangements. That was all done by her 1 year before she died. Not a coffin, it's more like a basket, and fixed in the corner of the house with and this basket set up on a frame and had candle lights on it. And it was set there, we kept the baby there 2 days. Before the third day, then the undertaker would come out and get the baby and take it out to the graveyard and have it buried. But my father and mother would sit there all night with the baby. My mother crying and my father trying to cheer her up, and Dad would tell us boys to lock the door and go to sleep. I remember when I was 6 years old, my mother was pregnant, was going to have another baby, and Dad, my father, told my brother and I to take a walk back in the field. At that time, we was irrigating, the canal come past our house, and he got a gunny sack and he had it under his arm, and he said, "You boys go back to the field and see how the water is back there. In the meantime," he says, "I'm going to walk up the canal and says I'm going to bring back a baby, and I think I'll bring back a baby sister." And so we walked back and to the field, and we got back while Mrs. Madison was there, and she delivered the baby. In our family, there was only three of the babies were delivered by doctors. Most all the babies were delivered by Mrs. Madison that lived there at Rosedale. She was a nurse in Denmark before she come out here. She's very well known. They lived there about 40, 45 years, and they're both dead and passed away now. And they were our nurses. So far as I can remember, we only had three doctors to deliver or deliver the, as far as delivering the babies. She did all the delivering herself. In them days, it was just horse and buggy days. We'd come to town to a doctor, why we'd have to hitch up a horse and a wagon and come to town. We had no other way. We were just poor people, and we just could barely make our own living without having money enough to have an automobile. And in fact, there's only one doctor that had an automobile that I can remember, and that is old Dr. Scott. And he had a brush car, and that's the only one I could see. And at the time, he come to our place one time to see my father when he was sick. And all the horses on the road run away. Some of them jumped the fence when they saw this first car coming down the road. It was a one-cylinder.
What was the car like, Mr. Claudino?
Well, it was a one-cylinder Metz, as near as I can remember. It didn't have a steering wheel. It just had just like trying to push a vacuum cleaner around. It had a pole coming out there, and you just push this pole back and forth. In other words, it was the same principle as it is on a vacuum cleaner. You try to use a vacuum cleaner in a house. That particular time when they come out to see my father, he had got poisoned somehow, and he come out to see my father, and he's coming down the road, and there was a wagon and a team of horses tied to the fence, and they saw this coming down the road, and the team broke away from this fence and run down the road and tore the wagon up, and one of the horses got pretty badly cut up in the wire, and it sure caused quite a commotion, I'll say. And my father had a time or two took a load of hay over China Grade to a farmer that lived out there. An old car coming up the hill, and our horses got really scared and broke loose from the wagon. The wagon went over China Grade, and Dad had saved his horses. Three or four times after that, there was other people come down there with their wagons, because that's the only way they had to come to town, was on the China Grade Road. So they had three or four accidents that the automobile just scared the horses off from the road. And then later they put up an ordinance that no automobile, no mechanical automobiles are allowed on the road. And thereafter, why we could drive on that road to go hunting over the, or anything else. But even the horses on horseback, if they saw one of these cars coming down the roadway, that they would just take off and might hurt the man or kill the horse or something. When I was 11 or 12 years old, my father used to call me a genius. So I decided, when I don't remember about that age, I decided to build a steam engine out of 5 gallon coal oil cans. And I would take spools of, I'd take pieces of wood, 1-inch broom handles, and cut them off, and then put a spool of thread on the end of these handles, nailed them on. And I'd run one spool down to another one, and I'd cross it back and forth like little shafts. They put two spools of thread on each shaft. And then I would have these 5 gallon coal oil cans and burning wood underneath to make my steam. So I made two fans, the fans out of wood. Then I'd open the top of these 5 gallon coal oil cans we used to have in the olden days, and they would throw steam on these fans and push the shafts around. And then I would have quite a menagerie of shafts, and my belt would be a cord going around these threads. And I'd have quite a menagerie going around, and one day this thing blew, 5 gallon can blew up, and it burnt my face, my eyes, my hands. And my father seen it, and he went and got an axe and chopped it all up. And he said, "Don't you ever build one of these damn things again." At the time, my father told my mother that I was going to be a genius, an engineer. Well, it happened. I got older, and I was 25, 26 years old. I was a blacksmith, and I opened up a shop at Rosedale. And I was back working on these engines again. I had bought engines and installed them all over Rosedale, Vail, and as they know me out there where I was born. And I did this out there for about 7 years, engineer on all these old gas engines that they would buy out, and I'd bring them in, repair them, resell them, or I'd go and start them for the farmers. And So I did become an engineer after all. Oh, yes, and our home we had there at Rosedale, we bought that years ago from the Kern County Land Company, from Mr. Jastrow. My father was foreman for the vineyards and the orchards and things like that. So Mr. Jastrow told me, my father one day, he said, "Say, I'll sell you about 20 acres down there for $1,000, and you can pay me as any time you want." So my father said, "Well, I haven't got any money down on me." He said, "Well, can you give me $50 and we'll call it the deal?" And then he says that you can go there and you can pay me $50 a year and keep it. So anyway, we give $1,000 for the ranch, and we're supposed to pay him $50 a year for the ranch till it was paid for. And I thought that was quite a deal. I'd like to buy some ranches right now like that.
This man's name was Mr. Jastrow?
Mr. Jastrow, and he's the one that donated this Jastrow Park to the city of Bakersfield. And he was a general manager and superintendent of Kern County Land Company. And then Frank Munzer was his assistant in Bakersfield, and he also was supervisor here at one time, Kern County supervisor, Mr. Jastrow. He died years ago, which all the old-timers all know him. We had from 50 to 75 Chinese at that time, and they would have a big rice bowl that probably held 10 gallons of rice, a cast iron bowl. They would cook the rice, there with water,
and they had no sugar or anything like that to go with their rice or milk or anything like that. And they would sit on their haunches around this bowl, big bowl, for hours and eat rice. And they could sit that way sometimes for 3 or 4 hours and never move. And then they would smoke, then they would, after they would eat their meals, they would smoke their cigarettes or whatever they had, their pipes, so on and so forth. Anyway, my father hired these people from the Chinese boss down in Chinatown. If he wanted to hire 10 or 12 men or 15 or 20 men, he would have to go to the Chinese foreman in Chinatown, and he had control of all the Chinese. So at one time, I can remember, we had 75 Chinese. And one particular time, as an older boy, as was me, asked me to say something to the Chinese. And what he told me to say was, "Will you call that fellow your son of a seafoot?" And this meant a dirty word in Chinese. And I called him, I called him, "You son of a bitch." That's what the word meant. This Chinese chased me with a shovel about 200 yards where my father was, and I run towards my father. When we got there, why, my father stopped the Chinese and took the shovel away from his hand and tried to talk to him. My father also could talk Chinese, and he was still mad. He was told my father that he was going to kill me. My father took him to the house and hitched up the horse and buggy and took the man to town.
How many Chinese people were in this area about at that time, Mr. Claudino?
Chinese were used, and at this time, I'd say there was about 300 Chinese, and they were used in vineyards, turning trays and picking grapes. Land company hired him all the time. My father, like he was superintendent for the land company and foreman, he had charge of all the orchards and all the pruning, and the Chinese also would do pruning for the Kern County Land Company, which they had many acres and acres of grapes and fruit. They had many vineyards scattered around through this part of the country.
Mm-hmm. Do you speak Chinese yourself?
My ranch we bought was also from the land company. No, I don't speak Chinese myself. I try to learn, but they always want to teach me how to say the dirty words. And I got punished for that, and I wouldn't do it anymore. had the lambs at the Greenhorn Mountain, the sheep. The coyotes would kill the lambs, and bobcats, and they would drag the lambs off. See, and then time, that's why that Dad had such a hard time up there, that when he moved up to Greenhorn Mountain, that he didn't think that he was getting into a bunch of trap by a bunch of bears and coyotes, and there were wolves at that time also. But the lions and coyotes would drag off these lambs. The bears would kill the sheep, and he lost many a sheep. That's one reason why he had a hard time making it, too, because he would have to sleep. Later, he would have to sleep in the sheep pen with a shotgun in his hand, at his bed. One brother or the other had to sleep in the sheep pen. They changed off each night in order to keep the bears away. Later on, after so much damage was done, sometimes they would find a lamb that was carried half a mile away from the herd by maybe a bobcat or a coyote or something, see. And a lion, wherever a lion will kill something, they will drag it away to eat it somewhere else. A bear, they would get in a sheep pen. They killed the sheep by playing with them. They actually didn't want to eat the sheep, but they would kill them, and a grizzly bear would eat sheep. But a black bear and a red bear would just play with the sheep and kill them, but wouldn't eat them. But there were grizzly bears up there in them days, and the grizzly bears really would kill the sheep. They would kill one after another, and then they would just sip the blood from one sheep to another. And if you didn't catch them there, they would stay there for
probably kill 15 or 20 sheep if you were, if you didn't happen to be there. And that's why one of the other brothers always had to sleep in the middle of the corral with a double-barrel shotgun. And that was a 10-gauge, and I had it many years before I sold it, which I never sold it.
Yes, you do have quite a nice gun collection that you showed me.
Yeah, I have a gun collection of revolvers and from 1832 cap and balls. I have revolvers, cap and balls, Confederate pistols, and I have some models from 1832 that's on the wall there, and that's a cap and ball, the biggest caliber made, caliber 69. And I can't find the shells for it. I have to order them out of Los Angeles or back east. But I have quite a collection of pistols and guns and bottles.
Yes, I can say you certainly do.
You want to get married, sir. Catholic Church, you have to go to the priest and tell them that you want to get married, and they prepare for it. They look back your history, and you look back as a church member, and they look back her history. And if you're not a good Catholic, like I've been in jail, or I murdered somebody, or something like that, I can never marry her according to his grounds. They would turn me down. She would have, and then if she went ahead and married me anyway, she'd be disqualified as Catholic.
That's what the conditions were at that time when your father and mother were married then?
Yeah, I said that they were both to have to be in good standing. If one or the other had been in jail or had trouble of some kind, they would be disqualified as a Catholic, and he would not marry her. They could not be married. And that's right, huh?
Uh-huh. But now your father, after 18 years, you said came back. Well, then, if I understand you correctly, Mr. Claudino, this custom of originated back in Portugal with the Catholics, that if they wanted to marry, you said that they had to take communion, but they had to have papers to prove that they had done so, and your parents both were required to get all these papers, and that's what took 7 months for them to before they could be allowed to be married. Is that right?
Yes. Portuguese Meadows, my father was there about 4 years, and it was called Portuguese Meadows after my father and his brother left there. It was located around water basin. That particular time, he went to Rattlesnake Canyon, and he went in that direction to Portuguese Meadows. But it wasn't called Portuguese Meadows at that time. It was named Portuguese Meadows, was named after my father, and his brother left that part of the country. And it was ever since that, it's been called Portuguese Meadows by all the hunters that hunt deer in there in these days.
So it was actually named then in memory of your father, who was well known in the area.
You what?
It was named then for your father, who was well known in the area.
Yeah.
By all these people. Uh-huh. And how long was your father in this particular area?
He was in there. He had sheep in there for 4 years, and before he sold out to John Enos, and decided to come back and buy a ranch and go into dairy business. But he worked on the ranch for 2-3 years before he did that. Sheep, and they moved on up there, and they didn't know the bears, the grizzly bears and the coyotes and the lions and fox were so bad. They would kill so many sheep that really they couldn't make too much profit. The first year they had nothing but hell trying to kill the animals down where they could run their sheep.
How did they get the sheep up? That's pretty high up in the mountains, isn't it?
Portuguese Meadows, yeah. Portuguese Meadows is, it would take them, I think it took them three,
3 weeks to get the sheep up at Portuguese Meadows. And it was, they went up to, Breckenridge, but Rattlesnake Canyon.
What type of road was that?
It was a good wagon road, but there's a lot of room in the wagon road, just a wagon road and fields, and Rattlesnake Canyon and down.